It is Monday, April the 9th. This is VOA's International Edition. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, did Russia and Syria carry out a chemical attack?
Russians are denying it, and they're lying. This is an operation that was conducted by the Syrian government. I think our intelligence community will confirm it.
Presidents Trump and Xi remaining friends in spite of U.S.-China trade tensions.
They seem to be very close at a personal level despite these quite intense disagreements.
Facebook trending on social media, plus the sounds of a Solomon Islands superstar. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Syria's state media just a bit ago reported a missile strike today on an airbase in Homs province, saying that there were casualties, blaming all of that on the U.S. military, and Washington has denied it. Meantime, President Trump went to Twitter over the weekend to write about the situation in Syria. He said Syrian President Bashar al-Assad will have a big price to pay for launching a deadly chemical attack on civilians in eastern Ghouta, and blamed Iran and Russian President Vladimir Putin for backing whom he called Animal Assad. VOA's Victor Beatty asked University of Pennsylvania Middle East scholar Ian Lustick if he's surprised by President Trump's mention of Vladimir Putin in his tweets.
That has to be a surprise, although it is the case that President Trump has a history of responding emotionally and strongly to pictures of dead children. And these videos that are coming out of Duma are just mind-numbingly horrible, and he probably saw them and reacted.
Two U.N. Security Council meetings are scheduled for Monday, one called by Russia, which is interesting. What do you make of that?
Well, my own view, and I don't have any special intelligence, is that the Russians are playing the same game that they've been playing many other places, which is to straight-out lie about what's going on. They are calling these attacks a hoax perpetrated by the United States and by the rebels themselves in order to interfere with what they describe as a successful evacuation of this area. In reality, so I think the Russians are just trying to, are denying it, and they're lying, that this is an operation that was conducted by the Syrian government. I think our intelligence community will confirm it. I think they're doing it because they're terrified, they're very afraid of losing as many loyal Assad soldiers as they have been losing in the attempt to clear out all the remaining areas in this East Ghouta region. And Assad, by many reports, has relatively few loyal Alawite soldiers left, the elite units, and he doesn't want them killed off, dropping poison gas in a way that attacks women and children down in the shelters is a way to try to panic the civilians into leaving and cut the ground underneath the rebels. The United States, especially now that President Trump has promised he would, needs to make Assad pay a high price for this, and it may entail killing Russians because Russians are in those areas. But we've killed Russians recently in a relatively unpublicized attack made by Russian units on an American base, in which we used air power to destroy the unit of what's called Little Green Men. That's a secret Russian agents who pose as mercenaries. So the United States has already been willing to run those risks. And I think we should be willing to do that again.
It's interesting that this chemical attack, the reports of it come, and the videos come, as state media in Syria reported that the government reached agreement for rebels to leave Duma. So why would they attack an area that apparently is going to be evacuated?
Well, that's what the Russians are saying. The Russians and the Syrians are saying the same thing. But that agreement, it's not clear that actually that agreement was holding. And since it wasn't holding, and since fighting was going on, that's the context in which the reports arrived of a Syrian helicopter flying at night over this city and dropping a barrel bomb with these gases in it.
last week, the president announced that he wanted to bring home some 2,000 U.S. troops on the ground in Syria working to help defeat Islamic State militants. Is the timing of this going to change now?
Well, he was saying that, kind of ad-libbing foreign policy, while the Pentagon was, I think, very strongly opposed to this. They have on-the-ground intimate ties with people who've put all their lives and fortunes in the hands of the American military. To just turn their backs on them is something that the United States military absolutely doesn't want to do, and they're aware of how unsettling it would be to the region. One of the countries opposed to that precipitous withdrawal is Israel, because if the United States leaves, the Israelis are worried that the Iranians and Iranian-backed units would push themselves right up against Israel. Now, this is so I think that if the United States does respond, it will put us into a situation that probably will delay American extrication from Syria and make it more difficult for the president to defy what the military wants to do.
That's Ian Lustig. He is professor of political science at the University of Pennsylvania, and he was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News.
And also in the news, President Trump used Twitter this weekend to predict China will take down its trade barriers, while he expressed optimism despite escalating trade tensions between Beijing and Washington, each threatening increased tariffs on imported goods from the other. Mr. Trump's top economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, says the president is on the right side of all of this.
The whole world, please, the whole world knows China has been violating trade laws for many years, and President Trump is the guy calling them on it, and he's right to do so.
That's right. He asked Peterson Institute for International Economics non-resident senior fellow Gary Huffbauer if he shares Mr. Trump's optimism about China taking down trade barriers and starting to deal on intellectual property issues.
I think he's overstated, but I can see things that China could do. It could certainly stop these forced joint venture requirements, which are kind of vehicles for taking technology, and it could do other things as well in terms of its trade barriers. So I do think there's room for improvement. Now, will China become, something like Switzerland or Singapore? No, of course not.
President Trump appears to be relying on his relationship with Chinese President Xi Jinping through all of this tit-for-tat exchanges regarding tariffs. We ask Gary Huffbauer if this sounds right.
Yes, they seem to be very close at a personal level, despite these quite intense disagreements. But they do have things to agree about, and I noticed that North Korea said he would at least talk about nuclear weapons when they meet. And I think one reason North Korea said that was in the meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Xi. President Xi urged him to do that. So that was, you could say, some, backstage diplomacy, which has to be agreeable to the U.S. So there are positive aspects of the relationship, even though the trade pot is boiling pretty heavily now.
The give and take between China and the U.S. of late has roiled financial markets in the past. In the past week, U.S. stocks plunged again on Friday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 2.3%. Standard & Poor's 500 dropped 2.2%, while the NASDAQ fell 2.3%. This is VOA.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says he's pressed fair elections on the release of a jailed American during his private meeting with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro over the weekend. In an interview with the Associated Press before departing Caracas, Mr. Durbin said he urged Maduro to uphold democratic rights ahead of Venezuela's upcoming presidential election.
I think he is going forward as planned, and I believe that it reflects a political reality. I'm a politician by trade, and so is he. And you time elections to give you the best chance of victory. And he believes that postponing this for any period of time clearly is not to his political advantage. Despite all the rationales and all the explanations, that is the bottom line. A politician is going to set an election for a date and under circumstances that he thinks is most favorable to the outcome.
Senator Durbin's four-day trip was made at Venezuela's invitation and included a visit with Joshua Holt, who's been jailed in Caracas for nearly 2 years now on what the U.S. considers trumped-up weapons charges.
It was a sad and tough meeting, tough for me, I'm sure for him too. This poor young man, 25 or 26 years old, has been imprisoned for 21 months. It has taken a real emotional toll on him. He believes, and I do too, that he is a political pawn. This has nothing to do whatsoever with any credible commission of a crime.
Mr. Durbin is the author of a recent Senate resolution condemning Maduro's use of food as a tool of political coercion. He said he took time to walk through parts of Caracas, seeing the downtrodden faces of residents struggling to feed themselves.
You don't realize how desperate the situation is in Venezuela until you come here. Speak to the leaders, both political leaders and leaders in many different fields. And then, as we did yesterday, walk the streets of Caracas noontime and see and look into the faces of the people who are living through this this desperate situation. Venezuela is in a state of collapse, and it isn't just the decline in oil prices. There is a collapse of the oil industry. They have seen a 45% decline in their GDP over 5 years, which is greater than the Great Depression. And you see these empty, desperate lives of the people who stand in long lines.
Venezuelan government has yet to comment on what was discussed during Senator Durbin's visit. It's a rare visit. It came as the Trump administration considers an embargo on Venezuela's oil shipments on top of sanctions already imposed on dozens of officials, including Maduro, for decimating the country's economy, spurring a humanitarian crisis, and straying away from democratic policies. Senator Durbin returns now to Washington to share details about his trip with his colleagues in Congress. He said ratcheting up sanctions against Venezuela has been broadly discussed. A series of shallow earthquakes shook parts of western Japan today. One quake measured a magnitude of 5.8, causing strong shaking in parts of Shimane Prefecture on the Sea of Japan coast. Shaking of that intensity can cause buildings to collapse, walls to crack, grounds, and trigger landslides as well. No injuries have been reported. And now it's time to join VOA's Lori London, who's here with what's trending on social media. What you got, Lori?
Well, Steve, we're starting with the ongoing drama that Facebook has been dealing with. This week, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg will be testifying before Congress. Now, this comes just 3 weeks after reports emerged about the political data firm Cambridge Analytica gaining access to personal information into millions of Facebook users. Facebook has been quite embroiled in this drama. Not only is there an investigation here, but also in the UK. Now, the revelations came as Facebook Facebook was already dealing with another crisis, and that was the company's role in the 2016 presidential election. Facebook said that 140 million people had been exposed to Russia-linked propaganda. So pretty much after years and years of presenting itself as just a neutral platform, the social media giant now facing accusations of profiting from fake news stories and some of those antagonistic ads. Now, Mark Zuckerberg, for his part, has been on somewhat of an apology tour, saying there are steps being taken to ensure user privacy. He's been doing a number of media interviews, apologizing for what he calls a breach of trust. It should be pretty interesting this week to see what happens when he's grilled by lawmakers in Congress. And by the way, on another Facebook note, it is adding a new feature in the next few months that will allow Messenger users to unsend. And the other big story that we're keeping an eye on is a proposal by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. It's looking into beginning a database to track bloggers and social media in an effort to curb fake news and misinformation. But there are concerns that there could be abuse of these efforts because the proposal is so vague that it really cites any information that's relevant. So, again, there could be potential for abuse. Well, thanks to increasing concern about accuracy in media and the potential for foreign influence in the U.S. elections and policy through this so-called fake news, the Department of Homeland Security wants to monitor these close to 300,000 news sources around the world. They want to compile this database of journalists, editors, foreign correspondents, and bloggers and try to identify what they call media influencers. And it also wants to track media coverage in more than 100 languages. The department is currently looking for contractors to facilitate this database. Steve?
How about that? Many thanks, Lori. VOA's Lori London. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The American Heart Association says uncontrolled high blood pressure puts a person at risk for potentially deadly health issues like heart attack and stroke. The Heart Health Organization wanted to find out what options people prefer for treating high blood pressure. So they put together a survey of nearly 1,400 people, mostly under 45 years old and with high blood pressure. Survey participants were asked to choose from four possible options to treat high blood pressure. Drink a cup of tea, take a pill, exercise, or receive an injection. They were told the options could increase their lifespan as much as 5 years. The survey shows that exercise and injections were the least preferred choices, but the participants said they would try any treatment that would provide greater benefits. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Now a little something from the world of music.
Everybody loves the things you do, from the way you talk to the way you move. Everybody here is watching you, 'cause you feel like home. Like a dream come true. But if by chance you're here alone, can I have a moment before I go?
Rosie Delma is part of the Solomon Islands sound that has received international acclaim since before the country became independent from Britain in 1978. The teenage superstar is known worldwide for her covers, such as Adele's When We Were Young. You'd be here. Hits these days have their own special formula, a beat from dance music, powerful R&B vocals, and a rap verse or two, but ever so often the results is more than the sum of the parts, such as the case of Tess Ann Chin's Back to My Love, covered by Rosie Delma.
It's a long, long, long way from love, but you never be alone. I'm here for you, baby, always to sing your melody back to my heart. Long, long day when you're gone, I can almost hear you saying, come away, away with me.
Jamaican reggae artist Conqueror and Rosie Delma posted their cover of Adele's Hello 2 years ago, and it quickly had 5 million views, which at Last Note has had multiple millions more views. One article about Rosie Delma said her version of Hello is better than Adele's.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like me to go over everything. They say that I'm supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming.
Delma was recently featured in the Solomon Star newspaper with the headline, Move Over, Justin Bieber. In a recent exchange with Rosie on Facebook, she told me she would love to come to the U.S. to tour, and I, for one, can't wait.
Ankara. Come on now. Hello, how are you? When it's so typical of me to talk about myself, so I hope, yeah, I hope that you were.
Rosie Delma is quite an entertaining young lady. You should check her out on YouTube. Lots of videos there from the Solomons. I mean, it's great. You should check it out. Hey, listen, one quick sports note. Kenyans won the men's and women's Paris Marathon titles. Happened on Sunday. Two champions, guess what, finished almost together. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you with us. World News is straight ahead, and we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, John Ellison, I'm Steve Norman in Washington, and we hope you have a great Monday. Now a bit more from Rosie Delma and Conqueror.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At this year's Women of Courage Awards, the U.S. Department of State recognized 10 extraordinary women who courageously fight for their beliefs. The first honoree, Roya Sadat, is a writer, director, and film producer from Afghanistan. She uses the arts to raise awareness of the brutal challenges facing women and girls. And despite threats to herself, her cast, and her crew, she served as a pioneer for women's rights and women artists in Afghanistan. Dr. Julissa Villanueva is from Honduras and is being honored for tackling pervasive violence against women, changing the face of criminal accountability through the use of scientific evidence, and facing down gang violence. Aliyah Khalaf Saleh is an Iraqi humanitarian volunteer working to resist sectarian and radical ideology. She is credited with rescuing 58 young Iraqi military cadets who were ambushed by ISIS back in 2014. Sister Maria Elena Berini works at a Catholic mission in the Central African Republic and is being honored for her service to counter hatred, injustice, and war-related horrors in the Central African Republic. A Kazakh lawyer and human rights defender, Amen Umarova, is being honored for improving laws to address violence against women and children. Dr. Farida Rushiti from Kosovo is being honored for decades of advocacy on behalf of civilian victims of Kosovo's war. Lamaluma Said is a former slave from Mauritania. She is now a deputy member of parliament in Mauritania's National Assembly and is being honored for her relentless activism in the fight against slavery. As the founder and coordinator of a non-governmental organization dedicated to helping widows and orphans of the Rwandan genocide, Godoliva Mukasarasi is being honored for her role in bringing women's voices to the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. Sirikan Charoensiri is a lawyer and human rights defender in Thailand and is being honored for standing up for human rights. Aura Elena Farfan from Guatemala was recognized in absentia due to illness. She is being honored for enabling the prosecution of former military officers involved in extrajudicial killings. In recognizing these women, said First Lady Melania Trump, we stand for what is right. In telling their stories, we can teach young women and girls all over the world what it means to have courage and to be a hero.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
from Washington.